Right, we'll resume. I understand from Kath Oliver that Mr. Jessen has been called away. And it's probably just for me important to make a declaration. I realised for the first time that my son Elliot Marson was actually at the back of the room and works with Mr. Jessen and is having a water boy role. As I understand it. So I don't know anything about what he's up to. But
that's a concern, isn't it?
Yeah, we haven't discussed it. So that's I feel completely independent of all that process. So I think you can assure me of that. But that came to my attention this morning.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. So should we kick on?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. So we'll call Todd Moyle, who's KiwiRail's Chief Operational Officer and also their Deputy Chief Executive.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Kia ora kato katoa, and thanks for the opportunity today to present. So as Chief Operating Officer and Deputy CEO, I'm presenting today on behalf of KiwiRail Holdings. There's a little bit of history of 14 years with KiwiRail and its predecessors. Prior to that, I was design manager for King's Cross Underground Station in London. And prior to that, in pulp and paper and petrochem and mining across New Zealand and Australasia. And one of the things that it has taught me is there's nothing as complex as rail. And it is, well, it looks quite simple from the outside. It's complex when you get into the heart of it. Thank you for earlier on raising some questions, and I think maybe before I get into reading through my summary of my evidence, I might just try and answer that question around the importance of the integrated hub, because I think it's a really important question. Ultimately, there's three ways that freight will access rail. The first is bulk, which is like logs or coal or other elements where we are loading a train with bulk elements of freight. The second is through containerized freight, which is where we, at a CT site or a container transfer site, we're putting containers onto or taking them off trains. Or the third is through a distribution facility where we put wagons into that facility, and they're loaded between a truck and those rail wagons. And that's generally domestic freight, which we're doing extensively throughout the country. And that's working with our partners like Main Freight and Toll and others. Now, when a train will leave Palmerston North, it will have all three types of product on it. For us to deliver an efficient railway, we need to have all of those elements working in sync with one another to ensure that we get the full utilisation of capacity. A train leaving at its current length will have the equivalent of about 107 containers on it, or about 50 trucks worth of product that will leave that site. We are investing extensively at the moment in collaboration with government across the whole network to increase what we call our principal operating parameters. So we look at the network and all its constituent bits, its hubs and its yards and all of those other elements to look at how we can provide the best integrated solution. Our network at the moment runs at 18-ton axle load. Every sleeper that I put in the North Island, every bit of rail that I install is 22.5-ton capable. Every bridge we build is 25 tonnes. So what we're looking at is we're looking towards the future where we can actually improve the role that rail plays, improve the efficiency of rail so we can run heavier, longer trains. But we're also looking at the kinematic envelope to make sure that we can, our whole network can access high cube shipping containers and be able to deliver them to the international market again to ports so we can deliver for our customers. So we're looking at it and a whole supply chain. Now, a hub doesn't work if you don't have all of those various elements coming together. Less than a container load work, that's where we're getting people that are consolidating product in a facility. We don't do that as KiwiRail anymore. We used to in previous ownership models, but that's all done by various customers like Toll and Main Freight and others who work with us on sites throughout the country on QRL owned land to do that work. Now, no one customer on their own in the domestic market would fill one train. That's why we need multiple sites and multiple sheds to enable us to fill that train and get the best efficiencies that we can. And so when I talk about domestic volumes, they will bring a train into Palmerston North. We will then break it up into its constituent bits and put it into the relevant customer's shed. They will then take it across a dock in the middle, which is at the level of the wagon, into a truck that's at the same level on the other side, and they'll have five or six trucks lined up, and they'll deconsolidate that wagon into a truck, and that will then go and distribute around Palmerston North, the Manawatu, even across to Whanganui. And then they'll then come back and reload those wagons with other product, which will then head north or south out of those sheds. So looking at it at its independent bits, the system won't work if we don't have container transfer, bulk handling, and the sheds working all in sync to make sure that we get the best efficient outcomes we can for the distribution of freight.
So in terms of adjoining landowners, their ability to access into your network is not precluded from that configuration, is
absolutely
that right?
Absolutely not. So they've got they'll have the two options of accessing it. One will be that if they've got a full container load of product, they can then transship that across to the CT or container transfer site. That will then be put on onto a train via that route. Or if it's less than a container load, then they can work with the other partners that are there to do the deconsolidation for them and move across to their facilities. So we work quite heavily with Progressives and Foodstuffs and other customers throughout the country. Most of that product is handled through one of our partners in terms of the management of that throughout the country.
So is that quite a specialised function, that ability to integrate well with the network, and it's sort of like a freight forwarding role, is it?
Absolutely. So, and it's not a role that KiwiRail has done for probably the better part of 20 years. And so that last mile activity so has always been done by a partner in recent times. But what we have seen, even in the last financial year, up to more than it's double digit growth in terms of domestic volume on rail. And that's in part being as a result of COVID, but also a need for, there's been greater consumption of goods throughout New Zealand, and rails had to play a major role in the movement of those goods to meet customer demand.
So in terms of qualifying these people that you use in that way, are there particular operational things that they need to, skills and understanding that they need to have to work with you?
Absolutely. And what we tend to see is we have some customers who they'll grow into the scale where they can justify the capacity of a shed and rail sidings, and they grow into that capacity through using container transfer sites as a starting point. And so there's multiple options for customers to access rail, and multiple approaches that they take to do that. And sometimes it's scale that dictates it, but in essence, it's each party will have their own different ways of operating.
Right. That's very helpful. Do you have any questions around that? Thank you.
All right. I'll read from my evidence directly, but might add some points. I'm happy to take questions on the way through. So, but QRail is a state-owned enterprise, and we're responsible for the management of the operation of the rail network. And I think, like has been discussed extensively today, that's much greater than just the track. The track enables us to move product from point A to point B, but a lot of what we do is actually how we manage it at those various nodes and those various points. Rail is critical infrastructure for New Zealand, and that's being recognised more and more in recent times, primarily because of the ability to efficiently and safely move large volumes of freight, and that we're ensuring the resilience of New Zealand's supply chains and its transport networks. The importance of KiwiRail network to the New Zealand economy is demonstrated by the significant amount of freight that we do move. And also I think a key element of that is that we move over 25% of all New Zealand's exports to port, enabling New Zealand's GDP earners. It's also important for the growth of the national economy, and also I think even more importantly, it's been incredibly important for regional productivity and growth as well, and we see that as a key role in what we do. It also provides that vital connection between primary producers and New Zealand's various ports. Palmerston North is a key freight distribution centre, and that's been discussed at a few points today. Outside of the Auckland-Hamilton corridor, Palmerston North is the next key node for freight distribution throughout New Zealand, and has been for a wee while. It's critical in terms of its ability to go east, west and north, south out of Palmerston North. And what we find is that it is the distribution point for the whole lower North Island, everything south of National Park. Kurel has an existing intermodal freight hub in Palmerston North, and it's located on the NITMT, and it runs from Auckland to Wellington. We are investing extensively in upgrades to the national network, as I mentioned earlier, and the increase in the capacity, resilience and efficiency that will provide to New Zealand. Over the coming decades, the demand for freight movements is expected to increase substantially. There are estimates that by 2050, that volume will be 40% higher than it is today, and that is without rail taking any greater modal share than what it does at the moment. The capacity of Q-Rail's existing infrastructure and its ageing assets are critical factors that impact our ability to meet the growing demand that's ahead of us. In the context of Palmerston North, the facilities at the existing freight hub are old and fragmented. You would have had the chance to see them in recent times, and they need to adapt to meet the changing needs of the way that freight is handled today, including the accommodation of longer trains and hosting better freight distribution facilities. The existing freight yard is also surrounded by residential development, so it's unable to expand to accommodate the future freight demand in an efficient manner. Kurel determined that it needed to develop a new intermodal freight hub to efficiently accommodate the future freight growth. The way that freight is being handled is changing. We're seeing a proliferation of inland ports being used to manage and stage freight and containers in order to efficiently deal with the demands of importers and exporters. Direct access to rail, as I discussed earlier, is utilised to is going to be critical to ensure the efficiency of the rail network. Kurel has also identified the need to increase the length of trains up to 1,500 metres, that we can accommodate on our network, which will increase the operating efficiency and reduce the costs of the freight that we deliver. The proposed freight hub is a centralised intermodal freight hub, which incorporates the arrival and departure tracks. So those are the roads that bring our trains in. It also incorporates the roads that enable us to break those trains up. It incorporates container transfer facilities or a container terminal, which allows us to get containers onto and off the tracks. There's also a key requirement for maintenance facilities in Palmerston North, and then also the ability to have those freight handling facilities as well, bringing all of those components together for an efficient rail system. It's been designed for the long term. Look, Kurel has been a key part of Palmerston North. I think Palmerston North and rail has grown together over the years, and there aren't too many other locations where we've actually had to move our freight facilities to accommodate the growth of the city, and we did it in 1959, and we're at the point now where we've actually outgrown the facility for a second time, and hence the reason we're looking at the need to move for a second time. And what I think it shows is that both Palmerston North and Kiwi Rail have grown together over a number of years. The freight hub has been designed and will be constructed with latest industry standards in mind, including the incorporation of environmentally friendly, sustainable designs. There's also the provision for 4 electrified tracks. And when I talked earlier about the principal operating parameters for our network, one of the elements that we're also looking at is what is the fuel source for the future for the North Island. And we're likely to, we have the challenge of being carbon neutral by 2050, so there is a high likelihood that further electrification and further fuel sources will be part of how we distribute freight in the North Island in the future. And I think that puts even more criticality on the need for Palmerston North, both in terms of electric maintenance facilities and to accommodate electric trains beyond what we currently do today. Due to the complex nature of the project, it will have to be built over many years and in stages, and it's anticipated to be fully operational by approximately 2051. I know there was a question early on about the staging of it, and I think some of those timeframes are accurate. We're talking around design and other elements, but it will have to be delivered in a staged manner to meet those various demands from our freight needs and our customers. One of the major benefits of rail is sustainability, and that's been talked about a number of times. The government has recognised that rail is instrumental in reducing New Zealand's greenhouse gas emissions as a modal shift occurs to move freight off roads and onto rail. Transporting one tonne of freight reduces, one tonne of freight on rail generates 70% less emissions than if that freight was transported on road. The freight hub will contribute to a modal shift and through this the emission reductions that that government has been targeting. The freight hub will have a range of benefits to the Manawatu and Whanganui region. It will ensure that Palmerston North remains an integral part of the New Zealand rail network and freight flows, and that the demands of importers and exporters can be met efficiently. The freight hub will enable the efficient transfer of goods between road and rail. The proposed location of the freight hub in the proximity of the Palmerston North Airport and the Northeast Industrial Zone provides significant opportunities to efficiently integrate transport modes and support other businesses in the vicinity of the site. It will also generate future long-term employment opportunities within the logistics sector. Just in some context there, in the last year, KiwiRail has grown our workforce by 250 employees to 4,200, and this year we're looking to grow by a further 600 employees with the growth that we're seeing in the freight sector and the role that rail plays in New Zealand. Overall, the freight hub will assist in accommodating freight demand more efficiently over time, enabling freight to be moved by rail, aligning with the government's goals of reducing carbon emissions and resulting in the wider economic benefits to the region and to New Zealand. So that brings my evidence to a conclusion, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Paulson. Thank you, Mr. Paulson. Oh, sorry, Mr. Moyle.
Good.
Question regarding the implementation timeframe. Basically, as set out, you've said that it might occur over a 30-year time frame. Can you give me a bit more concept about why that sort of time frame, and could it be lesser than that? And if it could be lesser, what would be the triggers that those timeframes may shorten?
So I think to start with, I think there is an extensive design and consenting and other process to be worked through beyond where we are at today, as I think has been covered extensively so far within the discussion. So that gives some context to the initial elements of it. We then have to go through the phases of the various phases of construction and moving the constituent bits. The timetable that's been put together at this point is indicative, and I think there's further work to be done to understand that in its entirety. So by giving the date of 2050, 2051 is based on the best knowledge that we have at this point.
What sort of triggers might there come into play that might shorten those timeframes or lengthen them alternatively?
I think the shortening of it will be around demand. The main reason that we're looking to move from one site to the next is scale and the demand that we're seeing and the growth that's in that in the Manawatu Whanganui area. And so as we outgrow the existing site, that will put additional demand on it. But I am really cognizant of the planning and design and consenting of the elements that need to run before we get to that point. That would potentially demand that we move slightly quicker, but I do think it. All of those elements have to be staged and delivered in a, I think, in a managed manner. One of the points that we are really cognizant of is making sure that the elements that I guess minimise the impact on the local community, that we're doing them as early on as we possibly can within that process as well.
So you talked about as well that KiwiRail has similar arrangements with Toll and Main Freight and other freight forwarding companies at other hubs around the country.
Sure.
What types of arrangements are those exactly?
So they lease sheds off us on our land that's rail served with sidings into them, exactly like what we're proposing to do here in Palmerston North. And that will mean that if they have product to collect in Auckland, it will be loaded onto a rail wagon direct from a truck in Auckland. That rail wagon will then be built into a train in Westfield and delivered to Palmerston North, where it will then be shunted into their shed in Palmerston North and distributed to a consumer or vice versa in Palmerston North. We have those locations in the same manner in Hamilton, Palmerston North, Wellington. We have them in Blenheim, or just out of Blenheim in Spring Creek, Christchurch, Dunedin, and even in Invercargill as well.
And are all those other sites designated, Mr. Moyle?
It might be a little bit too much detail. I might have to ask Olivia to answer the planning details of those ones. Sorry about that.
Okay. What is your intent at this point in time for the future use of the Tremaine Avenue Freight Yard?
I think Olivia would be the appropriate person to answer that one.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Moyle. That's all the questions from me.
Kia ora, Mr. Moyle. Thanks very much for your evidence and for answering the questions too from the panel earlier. That was most helpful. Just what I think will be a relatively easy and quick question for you. In relation to paragraph 7.4 of your evidence, you refer there to how critical it is for the rail terminal and its yard to operate efficiently, and that operations must be focused on keeping freight moving. And I'm just contemplating that in the context of many of the submissions from people in the vicinity, you know, of the Freight Hub site, and their concern about noise in particular, and requests for nighttime noise curfews, something of the like, or reduction perhaps in nighttime activity. And I'm just wondering, from your perspective, how feasible an idea like that might be. I mean, is it a functional requirement of the Freight Hub to operate on a 24/7 basis?
Absolutely. So just to give some context of how freight works. So if you're a 3PL, if you're a third party logistics operator like a Toll or a Main Freight, you will go from midday, they will be going around and picking up all the parcels from Palmerston North that they want to send north or south today, and while businesses are open, and they'll work that through till 6 p.m. tonight, At 6 p.m. they will then start loading them either into their line haul trucks that they'll send, the big HPMV trucks they'll send north or south, or into rail at that point, with the expectation that the movement of the freight will go throughout the night and will be waiting for them to turn up at 4 o'clock tomorrow morning at their terminal to then distribute. And then they do all of their distribution to customers between 6 a.m. and midday. So the need for the freight hub to work at night, freight generally moves at night. That's when most of the activity occurs. Yes. That's when, because what they're doing during the day is actually distributing it and picking up from customers who are working. So that ability to not do it at night, it's not feasible.
Mm. Thank you for that.
So that's the same with the roading freight network as well, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right. Thank you. Yes, that makes a lot of sense. And so I take it in that context then, given what you've explained and how you've explained the operations, the nighttime sort of operations of the freight hub, even reducing that nighttime activity to some degree to help to perhaps reduce or minimise noise and other effects would presumably not be feasible either.
It would completely undermine the efficiency of the operation and the ability to deliver to what I think regions expect in terms of people expect to be able to order something and it turns up within a day. And what you would essentially do if we consigned the rail terminal to any form of constraint in that, the only option would be to road it, and that would undermine the overall efficiency of the operation.
Mm. Thank you for that clarification. Just one further quick question for you. You mentioned electrification and how this will presumably become increasingly important in the future as we move towards more urgently meeting our carbon neutral targets as a country and as a global community. What's envisaged, if you know this already, or perhaps it's too soon to know, but what would be envisaged in terms of the proportion of the freight hubs activity, being electrified at the commencement of its operations?
So at the moment, we have the network from Palmerston North to Hamilton is electrified, and we run electric trains between those two points. Right. What's not connected is Palmerston North to Waikanae, or Hamilton to Sunta. We're just electrifying from Papakura to Pukekohe in Auckland. So there'll be two gaps in the electric network. So we are looking to try and fill those gaps, and that's something we're actively working on as an organisation at the moment. In terms of the hub itself, we have just invested in 20 electric shunts, which we're using and we're trialling across our network at the moment, which is for moving various bits around some of our depots in a more fuel-efficient manner. That doesn't mean that's where we will totally end up, so we are trialling those, and probably for more of the lower end tasks around our facilities, but we are absolutely committed to being carbon neutral by 2050. So we are looking right across our network. Okay. We are trying to challenge some of our other fuel sources as well, and looking at whether multi-mode locomotives are an option, so that you could maybe have battery and electric all on one locomotive, so that if there is a gap in the electric network, it could run on battery until it can get back onto the power again. So there's a number of options we're looking at, and that will be staged between now and 2050 in terms of what our options are for implementing that. But it's absolutely fundamental to where we are heading in the future, and it's one of the critical reasons that the New Zealand government's investing so heavily in rail at the moment.
Thank you very much. No further questions at this stage.
Good afternoon, Mr. Moyle. I have a couple of questions. One of them is building on one you've answered in part, and I think been asked already by Commissioner Sweetman. And it's around the potential lengthening and shortening of the delivery time frame for the hub. Obviously, you're right, something I'm interested in. So my understanding of the evidence before us at the moment and what you just said was that we have a consenting and design time frame that's going to be challenging and probably relatively fixed. There is an enabling works time frame, which is the noise bunding, the perimeter road, moving the existing railway, which once again is likely to be relatively fixed. And you then have the delivery of the operational hub, if you like, great, after that. And I guess it's just seeking a little clarification around that. So my understanding is that it's likely to be that element that is more likely to be demand-driven than the earlier elements.
Absolutely, yeah.
So whether the hub is completed by 2050 or 2040 is market-driven, rather than sort of internal policies or anything around that.
So I think there will be a large element of market drive there. But what we do know is we're seeing a huge growth in demand through the Manawatu Whanganui area, which is obviously the reason that we are pursuing this.
Thank you. You mentioned a little earlier as well that the comparative emissions of rail and road delivery per ton is about 70% difference.
Correct.
Does that allow for diesel or electric?
So it's based on the diesel locomotives that we're currently using. So there was an EY report that I think has been included in the evidence pack that was done for the Ministry of Transport around the value of rail, and they looked at all of those elements as part of that.
So if you went to electrification, you'd expect a much greater emission offset.
Absolutely, and I think that's where we're committed to going to as an organisation as well, is to go that route, particularly for the North Island, where we've got options around electrification.
Paragraph 7.4, once again, sort of maybe expanding on a question you've just been asked, and this is around the 24/7 operation. And you very clearly explained the importance of being able to operate at night because your freight distribution partners are busy picking everything up and passing it out during the day. In terms of the balance of daytime to nighttime train numbers through your existing hub, what sort of percentage would you say that balance is? Just in broad terms to give us a feel.
It's reasonably consistent. So if you imagine during the day through Palmerston North, we're often handling logs and other volumes that's going through to port, and those elements. And then during the night, it's often our domestic and import-export trains that we're managing through the night. So you've got different product sectors that we are delivering to, and they are reasonably evenly split. And that gets the best utilisation of the facilities and staff and everything else associated with them.
So roughly how many trains a day?
It's a good question, through Palmerston North. So we're doing about 900 trains across the whole country in a week. So through Palmerston North, you're probably, of that, you're probably getting about a third of that through Palmerston North in a week, and that would be pretty evenly spread across the day. Oh, sorry, I shouldn't know how many I do through Palmerston North.
Thank you, that's helpful to give me a sense of scale. And at paragraph 7.3 of your evidence, I think we're talking about key components of the freight hub, and it's touching on the overall design. And obviously having access to rail is fundamental for a rail freight hub.
Absolutely.
But you talk about the importance of it being immediately adjacent to the NIMT. And I was wondering whether there were any options or any exploration of potential rail spurs as an alternative to realigning mainline, essentially.
In terms of the options assessment, I think Olivia Paulson will be best to speak through each of those elements. The adjacency to the main line and the criticality of that is the ability to every time you go onto a spur, you need to come and you need to be able to go both ways. So you can't just go from a single end. And if we were to go on a spur and you weren't able to access it both ends, that would severely limit the operational operability of it. And if you're going both ends,